From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available on iTunes.
Welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. On today's show, aerial circus training, Carmel's new German Christmas market, and two suggestions for the book lovers on your list. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All this and more right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Today, Victor Oladipo is a point star, but we find out what occupies him away from the hoops. But first, artist Terry Border has a sense of humor. His biography mentioned that the late Roger Ebert liked his work and called him brilliant, so he'll always have that when he drinks too much or writes about himself on his website. With a degree in fine art photography and a career in commercial photography, Terry found his way to a career making sculpture out of ordinary objects like, well, peanuts. His new kid's book, Merry Christmas Peanut, tells the tale of a little legume who could. All right, key question. Have you always played with your food?
No, I have not. People always say that, but my mom would have been in trouble. So no, never did.
So how does a person become a photographer slash author of food-based characters?
From a lifelong wondering of just what I want to do, I ended up just playing around. After photography, I was baking, actually, for several years. And I just started in my off hours. I was creating art and finally got to the point where buying the materials was getting expensive. So I decided to use the things that were around me. And I looked in the kitchen one day and I picked up some food products and turned them into characters. And it's strange, but it's all worked out for the best.
And because this is radio, I so wish this were television, but it's not. Can you describe, do you want to take just one frame of Merry Christmas Peanut and just describe it to us?
Well, my favorite spread in the book is at the end when everybody does make it past all their obstacles, they get to Grandma's house and they have dinner. And they sit down, and because they're tiny peanut characters, all the characters in the book are tiny are peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
So they sit down, and there's a plate of pasta contains about four or five pieces of pasta because you know they're so big. And Grandma is serving mashed potatoes out of a wagon because I really like mashed potatoes, and I think that would be a dream come true to be have them served out of a wagon. Just pile them on my plate. And there's a lumberjack character, and he is cutting a piece of Jell-O for himself, but he's cutting it with a saw because I think that's how a lumberjack would cut anything,
sure.
Even Jell-O.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It's just it was just a lot of fun to make that spread.
There's a character, and I think it might be Grandma, who's wearing a raspberry for a hat.
That is Mom.
Oh, that's Mom.
Yeah,
okay.
That's Mom. See, look over to the right side, you see Grandma, or left side, and you see Grandma serving
the mashed
potatoes. Oh, there
she is. And she has a tiny ball of yarn as her hat.
She's, well, it's supposed to
her
be
hair.
Her a bun. Yes.
Yeah.
It looks kind of like a hat. Mom, throughout the book, she has a big pink hat on. So for that spread, I switched it out and gave a raspberry, which is pretty much the same shape.
Oh, it's the dress-up version of the pink hat she's been wearing throughout the book, of course. And I love, you know, there are plates piled high with servings, but, for example, three peas comprise a serving because these are to scale.
Yes, exactly. And I think if you're a kid, if you're a peanut kid, you should not be forced to eat more than one pea.
You've thought really deeply about this.
I do. I think a lot. You know, as I'm working on these for days at a time, you have a lot of time to think about what a peanut would eat for a Christmas dinner. especially those little those miniature candy, those miniature corns that you get in Chinese
food.
Yes,
those little niblets.
Yeah, they looked about the right size for a peanut, but they're still a little bit big. But, yeah, that was a blast.
This makes me want to follow you on around a trip to the grocery store with a video camera.
You know, people have actually done that, and it's a lot more boring than you would think, maybe.
Well, and among other things, I mean, this is a somewhat tongue-in-cheek question, but there's a little seriousness here. How do you reality check what you just said? Do you show it to your wife and daughter and say, does this make sense to you, or is this fun, or is this cute?
Usually, my wife is definitely my partner in this, and she's a graphic artist, and
actually, right here at WFYI.
Yes, yeah. And she really is good with kind of like you say, a reality check. But I've been doing this for so long also that I kind of know what works. But there are times where, you can get too close to a piece, too close to something you're making, and you begin to see things that meaning that it's not there. So it is good to let somebody else see it.
And the corollary to that, too, is this is a book for anybody of any age. I mean, it's absolutely charming, and it has a message that resonates whether you're 9 or 90. But you clearly were thinking about children reading about the adventures of the Merry Christmas Peanut and obstacles. And what do you do when you encounter obstacles? How did you get in the mind frame to be a storyteller for kids?
Well, that's a good question. Because when I started this project of making art out of ordinary objects, I was really doing it for adults. And then I was, but I knew I wanted to make some kids' books. And I wasn't sure if I was capable of making a story instead of just a single panel cartoon. Mm-hmm. And it has come with some struggle. I've kind of learned as I've gone along. My editor, Jill Santopolo, has helped a lot. But usually she'll give me a direction, and I will just think and think and let things percolate in my head and maybe write a rough draft out. I send it to her, and she shoots most of it down, and rightfully so. I look back, and she is on the money every single time. But she'll find the kernel of a good idea, and we build on that. We go back and forth. Most of the writing is mine, but she... So most of the writing is mine, but she shapes that that rough lump of clay into something that is readable.
And the raw materials that comprise this book are, some of them are perishable. How often do you have to create a tableau more than once, or do you just get it just right and tinker and then shoot it?
That's what it is. I just tinker and usually, if I write, I draw out the idea, the basic rough draft of the picture. Then it takes several days to make the props. Then photographing it usually takes a day to day and a half. And sometimes I'll have to replace if there's an item that can melt or spoil. But most of the time, each photograph is a very long day, and I can get it done before things start to mold.
I'm so tempted to ask about cannibalism. Did any of these peanuts end up being a snack?
No, none of these, because by the time I get done photographing these, the little arms and legs have to be super glued in there, and I'm afraid to eat any of the glue.
Yeah.
But I do, when I made this book, I ordered a 25-pound box of peanuts, and I actually sorted every peanut in the box because, in our minds, we think of peanuts looking just a certain way, and that's how a peanut looks. But in reality, if you look, each peanut is different, and some of them look like they're bending over, some of them look like they are very tall, some of them look like they're very small. A lot of them are deformed in strange ways that I could never use. So the main person or the main creature around our house that enjoys me working with peanuts is the squirrels outside. They have started coming to our back door on a regular basis because they know I have all these extra peanuts.
Merry Christmas Peanut is a kid's book, sure, but I'll bet the adults on your naughty or nice list would appreciate it, too. Find it wherever books are sold and see Terry's other books, calendars, and art projects at terryborder.com. Carmel, Indiana loves to push the envelope and reinvent itself, particularly when it comes to arts and entertainment. City leaders decided that they wanted people to come outside and mingle in the winter months just as they do during farmers market season, so they explored the idea of a traditional German holiday market plus an ice skating rink. Banker Maria Murphy was in one of those brainstorming meetings, and she had just the right combination of skills and history to become the Christkindlmarkt's master. I invited Maria to tell me how she came to be in the right place at the right time and why you should bundle up to check out the market's vendors and ice rink.
Did you ever know you were going to be a market master when you grew up? How does a person become a market master?
That is a really good question. I had no idea until this came up that it even existed as a potential job. I had no aspirations toward that. I actually have a background in banking, funnily enough. 10 years in banking.
There's a lot of money exchanging hands at the market.
There really is.
There we go. So I guess see the connection.
Yeah.
So what was the city's goal in creating both the ice rink and the holiday market?
Absolutely. There are two different major goals. One was just to create an environment to build community and to get people out in the winter. We have our wonderful farmers market in the same location during the summer, and you see a lot of familiar faces, and you're catching up on gossip and all that stuff. And just hearing about people's kids and in the winter, there really wasn't an opportunity for that in Carmel. And so we really wanted to have a place where you could come and just have community and see your neighbors out and about. And then the second piece that a city has to consider is the economic development piece, which is proven in other cities. These Christkindlmarkts in particular have proven to be a great economic driver in that they bring people from out of town. You have people staying in hotels, going to restaurants, shopping because they don't want to just come to a Christkindlmarkt. The average stay time is about an hour. And so somebody who comes in from out of town, they're going to try some raclette and some Glühwein, and then they might go sit down and have a nice sit-down dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and the location is perfect. You had the real estate there, the green space there, and it's close. It's in walking distance of a lot of great restaurants
Absolutely.
And coffee houses and that sort of thing.
Absolutely, yeah. And I've had people emailing me, you know, I want to have a birthday party there, and so I'm recommending other areas for them to go and actually have the cupcake, you know, part and then come and enjoy the market and ice skating afterwards.
Tell us what, for people who haven't had a chance to venture there yet, what are some of the booths? What are some of the things people can experience, buy, eat, drink?
Absolutely. There's so many. I mentioned the Glühwein, which is a mulled spiced wine. It's served warm. It's just delicious. We have some custom caramel boot mugs. If you haven't seen them, they're red and adorable. I'm a little biased because I did pick them out.
But you're allowed.
So there's that. And then there's hot chocolate and coffee. We partnered with a lot of our local businesses to get them involved. We have hot cider served as well. So those are some of the drinks featured. And then the food. We have raclette, we have crepes, we have pretzels.
And for people who are not familiar with raclette, describe it.
Okay. It's a tradition that started out in the Swiss Alps. It was actually the shepherds, when they were out by their fire having their lunch breaks, they would put their cheese on the rocks and let it heat up there. And then they'd pick up the rock and scrape it over bread or crudité. And that tradition now has evolved into massive amounts of cheese on bread and over meat, and it's just basically a ham and cheese sandwich on steroids.
Yeah, don't take your cardiologist with you
no,
to the Christmas.
No, don't do that.
It's once a year. It's, you can indulge once a year.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you have music?
Yeah, so I was really proud to be able to partner with the Liederkranz, which is an amazing choir group here in Indianapolis that's been around for over 100 years. years. I want to say they're celebrating 140 years this year. And they have an amazing choir director, and they have a manor choir, which is the men's group, the Damenchor, and then they have a bell choir as well as the Liederkranz, which is both of the choirs together. So they are coming out every Saturday, though I think they'll be there this Saturday at 4, if I'm not mistaken, as well as just a myriad of brass quartets and quintets and local high school students who are trying to get their name out. We've been positioning them on like the corners with little amplifiers and just trying to give everyone opportunities to sing their Christmas songs and bring some joy out there.
You speak very knowledgeably of German tradition. Do you come by that naturally, or was that research after getting this gig?
It's kind of a combination of the two. So I grew up in Yorktown, Indiana, and they had a really robust German program while I was there. And so I have 7 brothers and sisters, and all of my elder siblings took German. I think one maybe took Spanish, and he,
he's the rebel.
He was the rebel, right? But everyone else, including my younger siblings, took German. And so they would have an Oktoberfest every year, and we would make the food as part of the German club, and it would raise money for the year, and we'd dress up in our dirndls and everything. So I grew up with that tradition. I have German heritage as well. And then it was my junior year in high school, my German teacher actually told me about a scholarship called the Congress Bundestag Exchange, and given 8 children in my family, a foreign exchange program wasn't something in our budget. So I applied for the scholarship and I won. I graduated a year early from high school.
Wow.
And went what would have been my senior year. And so I lived with a host family there and have continued to be really close to them. They're like family to me. And so when I heard, I was actually in banking doing some different networking, and I was at a meeting where Mayor Bernard spoke, and he said he wanted to do this Christkindlmarkt, and I just went up to him and said, I you don't know me, but I speak German, I lived in Germany, and I'd love to volunteer. So I started out serving on the committee, calling my friends in Germany and saying, what do we need to make this authentic, and who should I call? Do you have connections? And then about April, I started that in January, and about April, Mayor Bernard called me and said, I'd like to offer you a market master position.
And this is why, if you're a student, take in all the experiences you possibly can. You'll never know when they'll be useful. Maria Murphy is the market master of Carmel's Christkindlmarkt. Learn more about what to expect by way of entertainment, food, and beverage at holidaysincarmel.com. You're tuned to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Coming up, how you can run away and learn circus arts right here in Indianapolis. But right now, Eat Drink Indie's Jolene Ketzenberger talks with Carrie Abbott about her company Newfangled Confections. Their tagline is, we make updated grandma candies.
So we are in the kitchen at Frittle. So tell me what it's like in a candy production facility at Christmas time.
It's a little bit crazy. It actually starts around Halloween. So it starts pretty early. As soon as you see the stores change over their holiday sets is exactly when we get busy. And then now we're mid-December. We're right in the thick of it. And then we finish up about next week.
Oh, wow. So what is going on in the middle of December? Are you still making candies? Are you wrapping? What are you doing this time of year?
This time of year, we're having our final shows. That's where we sell direct to the consumer. But then in a couple of days, it will go back to supplying all the retailers. So stores like Homespun and the grocery stores, they will be doing their next set of refill candies. So they'll want a lot of candy right before Thanksgiving. And then the week or 10 days before Christmas, actually, it happens all again. So now we switch into kind of wholesale mode where we supply, deliver, make candy for them.
Well, you mentioned seasonal, and here we are, obviously right in the middle of the holiday season. What kinds of things are you packing up? You have people behind us that are packing gift boxes and that sort of thing. What sort of things are coming out of the Newfangled Confections kitchen at this time of year?
We've had three, so I'll just remind you, this is so funny, 3 products in 5 years. So I was given advice a long time ago. I promise I'll answer your question. It's just the Fritil is our, you know, signature candy. So we always have Fritil going. The sweet and spicy nuts and the pralines. I would love to say every single year we come out with these like 12 really fruity, chewy, colorful candy. Those are my favorites. But doing just nostalgic, handmade, kind of updated grandma candies, honestly, we wait till late summer and just kind of decide, what do we want to try this year? And so this year we're doing Pecan Divinity, and that will only be available through us in Homespun down on Mass Ave. And then that's just a southern kind of marshmallowy meringue type candy. And then people have been waiting it for years, waiting for chocolate Fritil for years. So it's a milk chocolate. Now it's milk chocolate covered Fritil, which is a fudge meets brittle Fritil. And we'll offer that in little half pound boxes. And then the last, we decided to do this collaboration basket. We've always wanted to do this with other awesome confectioners in town, and that's Elizabeth at Best Chocolate in Town. She has white-coated chocolated, is that a word? Just Poppins, white chocolate, peanut butter popcorn, and then they sprinkle it with Fritil. So it's
oh my goodness, okay, now that's an awesome idea.
Yeah, and that's just one product in the basket. But the one product in the basket is a brand new exclusive Just Poppin' popcorn with Fritil that you can only get through our peanut lovers basket. And we call it that because we have we did a peanut divinity, we did a chocolate covered Fritil, a Fritil flavored Just Poppin' popcorn. And then lastly, we used our favorite flavor of Be Happy peanut butter, which is the honey roasted handmade peanut butter. And that's their Dream Big that has the pretzels and the white chocolate chips.
You can hear Jolene Ketzenberger's Eat, Drink, Indy Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2 The Point. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and coming up, a new novel by Lafayette's Melissa Fraterigo is filled with hardscrabble characters you'll want to root for. But right now, one of the newest members of the Indiana Pacers is sharing his hobby with the world. WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer is here with the story.
Victor Oladipo was a star player and a fan favorite when he was at IU Bloomington. He left the school after 3 years to go pro, but now he's back in Indiana, and he's hoping that local fans will not only love his basketball skills, but also his music.
I'm a great basketball player. I still got a lot of room to get better, and I got a lot of goals that I want to accomplish. So that's my main focus. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm human too, and I like to do other things, and music is one. I just wanted to share it with everybody else. And I feel as though if you have a gift, you should share it, because if you don't, then how do you utilize it? So.
Victor says he's always loved to sing. As a kid, he was in the church choir, and he was never afraid to share his voice with his family or his close friends. But it wasn't until this past year that he decided that he could share his talent with the rest of the world.
My close friends and people that I care about were telling me that I really need to share it, and that I'm really good and talented. And finally, I guess you could say, kind of build up the courage to do it, and it turned out good so far for me.
During the basketball offseason this summer, he released his first single called Song for You. He's been working with Sam Hook out of L.A., and together they've collaborated on a new EP. It's called Songs for You, and Victor says they are 7 songs that he hopes people can relate to.
It's a few songs that just talk about relationships and, you know, just relationships in general, like whether it be with close friend or, you know, significant other. And it's just things that people go through, and things that people kind of nowadays can relate to, as well as people who might be a little older than myself, as far as the Donnie Hathaway remake on there as well. So
has your commitment to athletics been a help or a hindrance to creating music?
It's been a help. I mean, it's helped me a lot. I feel like I pick up things really fast, and, you know, I'm learning very well, and I get that from athletics as well. So it doesn't really get in the way of each other, because at the end of the day, basketball comes first. So this has been a great hobby for me away from basketball. I love it. And I love basketball as well. So it's great to be able to be gifted in 2 areas that I play about.
Did you give free copies of the EP to all the Pacers players?
Pretty much they all checked it out so far. I feel like they all like it, though. It's pretty cool to be able to share that experience with my parents.
Well, obviously, he doesn't need to give up his day job yet to go after his music career. He is doing outstanding with the Pacers, but you can tell that music is also one of his passions, and I think he'll continue to do it, and maybe one day that will be all that he will do. In the meantime, you can download his album online. His EP is available online wherever you get your music.
Fantastic. You know, that's another argument for you don't have to choose arts or sports. You can do it all.
He certainly is.
Absolutely. And we have some ways you can do it all on our calendar we call
What'll We Do?
What do you have?
Well, the IMAX Theater in downtown Indianapolis at the State Museum, they are going to be running Star Wars The Last Jedi continuously.
Ooh. Wow.
Starting December 14th at 7 o'clock, all the way through December 17th at 11 o'clock. They pulled out all the stops. They're going to have souvenirs. They're going to have costumed characters, artwork, the whole deal. So you can definitely go online there to the IMAX Theater and reserve your ticket now.
Oh, that sounds like so, so much fun. Hey, one of the great holiday traditions, kind of a newer one, only been around not quite a decade yet, but at the Idlejord Museum, Jingle Rails, the Great Western Adventure, electric trains, crisscross miniature replicas of famous landscapes. They're all made out of natural materials, and you can see things like the skyline of Indianapolis and some of the great national parks. But new this year, because they always change it up every year, is a replica of Hollywood, including famous film industry locations like the Mountaintop Hollywood sign, Grauman's Chinese Theater with handprints and footprints of the stars, Paramount Studios, Warner Brothers Water Tower, a Western movie studio set, and the Griffith Park Observatory, all depicted in miniature. Find out more at idlejork.org.
And on Fridays during the month of December, the Buck Creek Players will be presenting It's a Wonderful Life, the radio play. It's a great new way to see a favorite of the holiday season. Tickets and time information available on their website, buckcreekplayers.com.
Going on in Irvington, the Irvington Historical Society is hosting a German Christmas customs exhibit, including more than 30 nutcrackers through February. And speaking of Irvington, you can hear a Christmas carol reading by the Gable Players. They're all Irvington residents. And that reading is coming up this coming Monday, the 11th at 7 o'clock at the Benton House. There'll be light refreshments there as well.
And now through the end of the month on Mass Ave in the 700 block, 751 to be exact, it's the Handmade Promenade. It's Martha Latta's pop-up shop. It's moved around over the years, and it's found a home this season on Mass Ave. You'll be able to find affordable, unique, one-of-a-kind handmade gifts for everybody on your list, and you can support local as well.
Christmas at the Zoo is in its 49th year, almost half a century old. It's going on through December 30th, and just like with Idlejorg's Jingle Rails, they tune it up a little bit every year at the zoo, and you get to experience some new light installations and some unusual animals. You can interact with wintertime dogs, penguins, reindeer, and many more adventures. Find out more at their website.
And on Wednesday, December 27th, Michael Bolton, the award-winning singer-songwriter, brings his full band and 30 years of hits to the Palladium up in Carmel. Tickets are still available, and he's going to be singing just a lot of his old favorite songs. So it's not necessarily a holiday thing, so just a nice way to take a break from it all. Tickets and time information online at thecenterpresents.org.
But if that isn't enough, there are a couple of upcoming holiday shows at the Palladium. Celtic Thunder is doing its concert on Thursday, December 14th at 7:30. It's its second tour with a full symphony. Celtic Thunder, all those amazing Irish tunes that you're expecting, but in a holiday setting. And then the Canadian Brass Christmas celebration is Saturday, December 23rd at 8 o'clock at the Palladium. Find out more at their website as well.
And if we haven't given you enough suggestions, you can find more online at the Arts Council of Indianapolis's website. It's the Indie Arts Guide. You'll find it at indiearts.org/guide. And of course, we'll be back again next week with our calendar that we call
What'll We Do? You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're tuned to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Coming up, a new novel by the executive director of the Lafayette Writers Studio. But right now, WFYI's Abby Terzini takes us behind the scenes of a fitness facility right here in Indianapolis that can teach you aerial circus arts.
Have you ever imagined yourself climbing on two long pieces of fabric doing all sorts of flips and tricks? Or maybe you've daydreamed about being part of Cirque du Soleil. Well, Mary Brumbaugh, instructor and owner of Cirque Indy here in Indianapolis, could make that a reality.
I'm going to walk back till I feel good tension in my hands, and then I'm going to set my hips back. So I'm making a straight line from my equipment all the way at the top down to my hips. And then from here, I'm just going to pick my feet up. I'm going to swing forward with my hand and backwards, land on the spot I started.
That's Mary, teaching her introduction class a little bit about the circus arts of aerial silks, which is one of the several classes at Cirque Indy.
We offer classes in aerial silks in three different levels. Aerial hoop class, which is like a ring. We offer flexibility classes, handstand classes, static trapeze, and kids classes.
Out of the classes offered, aerial silks is their most popular.
Aerial silks is a aerial circus discipline. You may have seen it in Cirque du Soleil. A lot of people call them the curtains, but they're really just long pieces of nylon that people will climb and do different tricks, flips, and inversions on.
Another discipline they offer is static trapeze, which is not to be mistaken for flying trapeze.
Flying trapeze is what people commonly think of when they think of trapeze. So that's two people on the flying trapeze doing a catch or like grabbing each other's hands and doing like partner catches and then dropping onto a big net. That takes about 40 feet of ceiling height at least. So we don't have room for that in our facility. And we do static trapeze instead. It's going to look most like a swing that you might have in your backyard. It's two cotton ropes with a steel core and then a steel bar that you hang from and flip under.
Mary has been practicing aerial for about 7 years, and she started out just like most of her students.
I started as an adult. I did not have a dance or gymnastics background. I just took a class, and I fell madly in love with it and decided I needed to do it every single day.
As Mary got more serious about the aerial arts, she started Cirque Indy not only to teach classes, but as a place for her to keep training as well.
I really started the gym out of necessity. Being an aerialist in Indianapolis several years ago, there was no place for me to train, and I had to do a lot of traveling to work on my skill set. There were several other aerialists that I was working with, and from there, I think we all had an epiphany that we really, really needed a space to train. And so I started looking, and, you know, it just made sense to pay for the space to train that we would start offering classes. And that's kind of how it started, and it's just grown from there.
When it comes to preparing for an activity like this, it isn't as hard as one might think.
A lot of folks think that they need to get in shape before they come, that they need to, like, have giant bulging muscles to try it, or, you know, that they need to be able to do 10 pull-ups, and that's not the case at all. I would say this is a fitness modality in itself. There's not anything that you specifically need to do to prepare for it other than to engage with the activity and practice.
And Mary encourages everyone to try her classes, no matter what shape, size, or age you may be.
I find a lot of people are like intimidated by the very idea of being off the ground. But then once they're in class, they start laughing and having a great time. I have seen all ages do this, and all sizes as well. I feel like you should get out there and try it and see if it's something that you like.
For Mary, the art of aerial isn't just for fitness. It's also fun and even empowering.
I think of it as a bodyweight exercise, and it's also play. It does take a lot of discipline and practice, But even so, when you're up on the equipment and you can, under your own power, flip your body upside down and do a 360 rotation in the air, or even something more simple, like just stepping up onto the equipment and swinging a little bit.
Mary says that one of her main motivators is her students, watching how excited they get when they successfully master a trick that they never even thought was possible. She wants to keep offering those kinds of experiences and continue to grow her business.
Ooh. Yeah. Yay.
Good job. WFYI's Abby Truzzini with Mary Brumbaugh, Cirque Indy owner and instructor. Find out more at CirqueIndy.com, and Cirque is C-I-R-Q-U-E, so CirqueIndy.com. Writer Melissa Frederico is the founder and executive director of the Lafayette Writers Studio and the author of a collection of short fiction called The Longest Pregnancy. Her new book, Glory Days, is a novel in stories filled with haunted, hollowed-out, hardscrabble characters who'll pull at your heartstrings. I invited Melissa to talk about how she met and shaped these characters, and she began with a short reading from Glory Days.
I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the first chapter of Glory Days. It's titled Ghosts. Mrs. Sparkman arrives early with two women from church. They set up the tables, talk about the new priest, the upcoming pancake breakfast, the heat. They set out buckets of ice and jugs of sun tea. I bring stuff from inside the house and set it on the tables, old clothes, the little jewelry she had, dishes and kitchen things, a couple stained dolls. More people arrive. Plastic bags hold purchases. The cash box fills. Everyone buys bits of us until only remnants are left. Mismatched socks, an egg timer that doesn't work. I hold Daddy's hand when the auctioneer clears his throat and waves a hand in attention. The driest year Daddy can remember. July isn't even over and the trees have already dropped their leaves. Tassels on the corn are dry, frittered things. Daddy had to give up the cows. There was nothing for pasture and nothing to pay for feed. Daddy's not the only guy paper mill laid off. He's just the unluckiest, he says. The buckets of ice have turned to water by the time they are done. Some shake Daddy's hand or squeeze his shoulder. Take care now, they say. We sit on the steps and watch the train of cars leave land that has been in my mother's family for three generations. Land the bank has sold. Dust whirls, we sweat, vultures spoon the sky.
You know, your voice when you read that sounded like Luann's as a young girl. Your voice changed, not just your words, but your actual voice changed. How did you find your way into this character?
Well, the story of Glory Days really comes from a dark period in my own life. In Glory Days, Luann and Teensy, as the book starts out, face the loss both of their land, and they're also mourning the death of Luann's mother. Luann is actually adopted, and Luann and Teensy just don't see eye to eye. Luann just doesn't feel at home in Ingleside, and so she's kind of drawn to the attention that men can provide, the kind of attention they can offer in the back of a pickup, on an Afghan along the river, or under the rafters of an abandoned barn. But as I mentioned, the book itself really came out of some very dark times of my own when I wasn't writing, and I didn't know if I ever would again. Somebody very dear to me was diagnosed with cancer, and I wasn't able to sleep, and I certainly wasn't doing much eating. And the only thing I was able to do to kind of provide some comfort was to wake very early in the morning while the rest of my family slept and read poetry. And it was a result of kind of looking at how poets condense and employ images to evoke an emotional state that kind of changed the way that I was working and looking at words. So in terms of how I put myself into Luann, I think a lot of it comes back to just being really intrigued by her story, the relationship she had with Teensy, but also using language in a way that allowed me to access her emotions.
The book is unlike any novel I've ever read, the poetry of the language, you've just explained how you got to that point. But it's, see if I can talk about this without giving too much away. It's a bit of a mystery because there are all these chapters and all these lovely characters. And as you're reading, you're like, oh, okay, how is she connected? Oh, I'll bet they end up together. Oh, I wonder, I wonder, I wonder. And did this start out as a novel or did it start out as character studies?
That's a great question. So Glory Days is a novel. It's marketed as a novel, but each of the chapters is a story. So they have their own skin. They can stand by themselves.
Right.
But when read in the order that I've conceived them, they have the same semblance and feel of a novel. But the first chapter or first story that I wrote is actually situated three quarters of the way through the book. It's called Teensy's Daughter. And it happened again at that same dark time I mentioned when I wasn't doing any writing, but I was doing this great reading of poetry. And I was just really, I guess, probably ultra aware of what was going on around me. And one day I heard a line, "Gardener hears dogs scrambling up the trees after a squirrel or a neighbor's cat," he tells himself, eager to be calmed. "It's not Teensy," he thinks. The same thing he's been telling himself for months. Teensy doesn't want anything to do with him. Isn't the sort who craves revenge. So within those couple lines that I just read, we're introduced to Teensy and this guy Gardner, and I had to figure out why do they not like each other. And then a couple paragraphs down, we discover that Luann, Teensy's daughter, has been visiting Gardner, that the two of them are involved, and I had to figure out what is she doing with this older guy, and why will she not leave him alone? So in many ways, unlike any other way I had worked, I had to kind of step back and figure out how all the pieces of these characters and their lives came together. So it became almost a jigsaw puzzle for me to solve, which felt very satisfying. It was really fun to work on this book.
So the voices are coming knocking at your door unbidden without their backstories.
Absolutely, yeah. And that was so much fun. I can't tell you how much fun it was.
Is there something you do, some technique, some way you practice your craft to invoke those voices? Or do they come to you, I said unbidden, but maybe they truly are unbidden. Maybe they wake you up and say, here I am, do something with me.
Well, I think certainly in one thing I try to do with all my writing, whether I'm working on a longer piece like I was for Glory Days or whether I'm working on shorter, even memoirs, I'm trying to keep the idea that I'm working on front and center. So even as I'm going about my day, I try and keep that in mind. And I let the world, I let my subconscious kind of have at it. And if certain images come to me, if certain memories, if I hear a phrase that's intriguing, I try and jot that down because I know that in some way my brain or the world or my subconscious is feeding me some material. It's trying to tell me this is something that you should pay attention to. So I just try and pay attention.
And you know, there are so many of those moments where the phrases, as a reader, reflecting on what you just said. So Luann at one point after a storm is trying to take a moment and she says, "Give me think."
Mm-hmm.
And in it, she hears her late adoptive mother's voice. But
mm-hmm.
"Give me think." It's very colloquial and very lovely and kind of, even if you haven't read the novel, that tells you something about the character right there, just that phrase.
Yeah. I think that language can do so much more than just tell a story. I think it can evoke character. I think it can become a way to feel a story, to have almost a tangible connection with what you're reading. And as I was reading poems during the creation of this book, I just would take note of words that I felt were really electric. I actually started an image book where I would just jot down words that felt particularly rich to me.
Lafayette's Melissa Fraterigo. Get her new novel Glory Days at Indie Reads or Book Mamas in Indianapolis or Four Kids Books in Zionsville. And learn more about her at melissafraterigo.com. Fraterigo is F-R-A-T-E-R-R-I-G-O, melissafraterigo.com. Every week, a Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long talks five songs with someone from our community. Here's this week's journey.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto, and this week I'll be sharing five songs from the Chicago-based band Esso Afrojam Funk Beat. And the group's composer, Armando Perez, joins me now via telephone.
And since forming Esso in just a few short years, the band has made two excellent LPs and racked up some amazing accomplishments. I know Esso was named Best New Band in 2016 by the Chicago Reader, and many other distinctions. Does it surprise you how quickly the band has kind of grown and grabbed people's attention and awareness?
It has. I'm actually very surprised by it. I see a pull and I see the attraction of a community-based band trying to promote unity, especially now.
And now we're going to sample five songs off Esso's 2017 album, Juntos. Up first, we'll hear the album's opener, Baila.
Man, I'm just I'm very happy with this song. It's one of my favorites. It really allowed us to expand and use more sounds and be fearless about how we want to compose and record a song and mix it and just like invite people onto the dance floor. So yeah, I hope people feel it and move to it.
Up next, we'll hear Stone Eagle, a spoken word piece commenting on the effects of gentrification in Chicago.
It's so important to have a message within your music. When you have music and you're building an audience and it's about good times, you also have, you know, a certain responsibility to speak truth and to speak on issues that have affected you in your life and issues that have affected your community. And as you said in Stone Eagle, gentrification is very real. And it's something that my family has lived through and experienced. And it's a challenge that many families in Chicago and around the United States, all like many cities that we visited, like they deal with gentrification and issues of inequality and injustice.
I'm failing to recognize you. You don't play with our friends anymore. They say you went through a transformation and identity change. They say you're getting better now, like when Angel was in drug rehab. Some say you're being gutted, while others use another ugly G word that hangs over our heads like a thick gray cloud, ready to rain guilt on us. The gentrifier, me, you, the poet, the artist, the developer, all characters in this drama now playing at the Logan Theater, right after the critically acclaimed...
And up next, we're going to hear the track Mariposa Negra, which combines house music with old-school cha-cha rhythms.
So Mariposa Negra was born in the mind of our lead vocalist, Diana Mosquera. She does so much music, and she actually came to the U.S. from Colombia. The song was born out of, from what I understand, from what Diana told me, it's like a myth or a legend back in Colombia when a black butterfly lands on your door, it signals it the death of someone near and dear to you. So that's what Mariposa means, black butterfly. But she spun it in her lyrics as to mean a good thing.
Mariposa negra, dicen que eres mal agüero, y te llevan los vientos para allá.
Esso's music explores a variety of Latin genres. And up next, we're going to hear a cumbia track titled Cumbia del Encanto.
The style and feel of cumbia is something we've been doing from the get-go. And we've been fusing that with like reggae because really cumbia is like Spanish reggae, you know? And it's got that same tempo and that same chuck feel.
And And the last track we're going to hear from Esso is titled Somos Hermanos.
I would consider this kind of an anthem because Somos Hermanos means we're all brothers. And so, working toward that idea of unity, I really wanted this song to have a positive feel, so it's in a major key. And primarily, I like to describe it as sort of a high life song. Oh, it's the sort of West African feel where it's just like that, the arpeggiated guitars. And so that feel really, I think, really permeates the song.
You can catch Esso live in Indianapolis this Saturday, December 9th, at Pioneer. And you can find more information about the band online at EssoAfrojamFunkBeat.com.
Hear Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 8 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks so much for listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today's contributors included Jill Dittmeyer and Abby Terzini. You can hear The Art of the Matter Saturday mornings at 7 or Thursday nights at 8. And remember, you can always listen to and share our podcast at your leisure at WFYI.org. Next week, how an Indianapolis native revealed the identity of Watergate's Deep Throat, Indianapolis Ballet Company's holiday concerts, and quality time with Professor Watermelon. And, of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.